Welcome to the Instagram Stories for Friday, September 12th. I'm your host, Daniel Hill, and this is the weekend edition. Today on the show, we're going to hear from the head of Instagram, Adam Mosseri, as he describes a problem that's been happening with Instagram for a while, but good news, it's been fixed. Additionally, we'll hear from YouTube creative liaison, Renee Ritchie, as he interviews a creator talking about a new feature of YouTube, multi-language audio. What's interesting about this is not only does it change the video content that you make into different languages, it also changes the cover art that you have on your videos into different languages. You're going to want to hear this because they make a couple points in this interview that I really like. Additionally, Ashley Coffey and I will discuss this week's AI news. We'll talk about a new potential California bill that is close to becoming a law designed to regulate AI companion chatbots. And we'll talk about a new AI startup that's all about creating podcasts for $1 per episode and their plans for profitability. All of that and more on today's episode, but first, here's a quick word from our sponsors. Welcome back. Let's start with the Instagram news. If you're a person who posts multiple stories on one day, maybe you post lots of stories on the same day, you might have noticed that you were getting less reach on those later stories the more you posted them. Interestingly, the head of Instagram was getting a lot of messages about this, and so the team has addressed this problem. Here's the clip.
We fixed something. Now, I look at my DMs and my comments all the time to try and see how people are doing and to figure out how things are going. And one thing I saw over and over again is that people were complaining about getting less reach with their stories if they posted lots of stories in the same day. And that is not at all the intended behavior of Instagram. So we looked into it and we figured out what was going on and we've addressed the issue. Now, it is still the case that not everyone who taps on your first story is going to tap all the way through to your last story, but no longer will posting more and more stories in the same day decrease the reach of your stories overall, particularly that first story. So if you want to post a lot in the same day, you can do so totally comfortably, and I will continue to scour those comments and those DMs for more opportunities for us to do a bit better. Thanks for the feedback. Peace.
If you are a person who has experienced this problem, hopefully things improve for you. And now let's move on to the YouTube news. The team at YouTube is announcing the expansion of multi-language audio to more creators over the coming weeks. Here's how this works. When a creator in the US releases a new video, within moments, fans in other countries who speak other languages can watch that same video in their own native language. This is something that the YouTube team has been working on for a while. They did a pilot of it 2 years ago, and since doing that pilot, they saw, on average, creators who uploaded multi-language audio tracks to their videos saw over 25% of their watch time come from views in the video's non-primary language. That's a fantastic statistic. It opens you up to more of the world to be able to enjoy your content. The YouTube team also says that they've begun piloting multi-language thumbnails with a select group of creators, giving them the opportunity to add localized thumbnails based off viewers' selected languages. YouTube liaison Renee Ritchie sat down with a chef named Nick DiGiovanni, who's not someone that I'm personally familiar with, but he's been part of this YouTube multi-language audio pilot, and he's been able to expand his audience because of having access to this. Here's a clip from the interview where they talk about how the multi-language audio works and how it's helped Nick reach more viewers.
When I meet people now in different countries who are listening and selling different. So for instance, I was in this little chain of islands called the Azores last week for just a couple days. And it's a chain of Portuguese islands in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. And they speak Portuguese there. And there were people that were coming up to me all dinner one night asking for photos. And one of these kids said to me, "You're really huge here." And I was like, first of all, I would never have guessed that. I would never have known that. But second of all, I got this weird look from a couple of them where it was sort of like, "I know that you're Nick, but you don't sound like Nick." And that's because they're not listening to my voice in these videos. So that was the first time that sort of clicked for me, ironically, just a few days ago. And I feel like some of these things might get a little bit lost in translation. And it's very interesting to think about, right? That there's sort of another me or someone else speaking in my same way somewhere. And I'll never really know how great of a job they're doing at it or lack thereof. But I mean, that's kind of the fun of some of this too. And I'm just, that's where you have to really trust the people that are doing the dubbing.
Yeah, I mean, like it's interesting because this has been something that's happened in traditional entertainment for a long time. Like I used to, as a kid, I would look at the different titles for movies around the world and the different, like I would listen to it in France French versus Quebec French or like Portuguese versus Brazilian Portuguese. And each had their own little idiosyncrasies. And I think what I love about this is you can choose those languages and you can cater for those audiences.
Yeah, you can. And the coolest part about it is that it doesn't affect the original English speaking audience at all. They in fact probably don't even know that there's dubbing because, you know, again, I was having a haircut just yesterday and there was a Japanese barber that was doing a little exchange at my barber shop, and he started talking with me and I hit him with a few Japanese words just from our trips there and he really loved it. And then he asked what I did and I showed him the channel. And immediately it popped up on his iPhone as a Japanese dubbed video, which was really cool. And so for me to see stuff like that as well, it's great. But also the great thing is, again, it doesn't affect somebody that's just watching in English every time because it's not going to pop up like that for them. And so the coolest thing is it was the most seamless transition to reach more people without affecting anybody that was already there.
Yeah, I think like two concerns that we hear. One is that, let's say I do the Spanish dub 2 weeks after the English dub. Is it going to have a fair shot in discovery?
Yeah.
And the answer is yes. Like the discovery team very purposefully treats it as a new video for that audience. So whether you do it same day or a week later, there's no like theoretical penalty. It just tests that new video with that new audience. And other people are worried because CPMs are different in different countries, and they look at the average. Like, let's say they get $100 in one market and $20 in the other market, and the average says $60, and they start to panic and say, what happened? But like, that's just the average. The total you're getting now is $120. Like, it's actually additive.
Yeah, so our primary language is still English, but I do know that adding on these other languages has not impacted the original English viewers in any way, right? When you get on a phone in a different place, the video should autoplay in that particular language. And so in that sense, all the original viewers are still very much happy. And then we've added all these different new languages. And I know that the average view duration in these other languages is often the same, if not even higher than it is in English, which just proves that point and that hypothesis that food is really beloved worldwide.
Okay, I'm going to stop the clip there. I'll link to it in the show notes if you want to watch the entire interview. But I really like the point that Renee Ritchie made about how the YouTube algorithm treats these translated videos. They treat the translated video as a brand new video getting its own complete shot at the algorithm, even if it's done a week or 2 weeks after you posted the original video. I think that's fantastic. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ashley Coffey and I are going to dive into this week's AI news. Stick around. Welcome back. Let's dive into some AI news. Ashley Coffey and I talk about a California bill that would regulate AI chatbots and an AI startup focused on creating podcasts for $1 per episode. Here's the clip. Welcome back. Let's continue with our stories. The next one is about an AI startup that plans to produce podcasts for $1 per episode. They think they can produce 3,000 podcast episodes per week. A little bit about this company. It's called Inception Point AI, and the CEO was previously the chief operating officer for the podcasting company Wondery. So this is someone who has industry knowledge and insight. The plan that the company is looking to do is to be able to produce each episode for around a dollar, depending on how long and complex it is, and insert advertising with that episode. So if 20 people listen to that episode, the company will make enough in ad revenue to make a profit without factoring in, you know, obviously overhead and all the other things. So why would they do this? They're just looking at how can we make money as quickly as possible. But this is where the term AI slop comes in. Is this really going to be something that people want to listen to? The contrast here, or the point that this article makes, which we'll link to, is some people use the term Luddite. And the CEO of this company said, people who are still referring to all AI-generated content as AI slop are probably lazy Luddites because there's a lot of good stuff out there, end quote. And this is new for me. I learned what the term Luddite actually means. Like, a lot of times we use it to describe someone who seems like they're afraid of new technology, or they don't want to actually invest in learning a new technology. But that's not what a Luddite is. This comes from a historical term, and it described people who were protesting that their wages were falling at the same time that the factories that they worked in, the people who owned those factories, were making increasing profits, food prices were increasing. And so they weren't anti-technology, they wanted economic justice. If there's profits and costs are going up for individuals, that profit should be shared accordingly. But now we use the term Luddite as an insult. So when this CEO was saying, oh, if you don't like this AI-generated podcast, you're a Luddite, that's not really a good description of it. I want to just get, Ashley, your thoughts. What do you think about AI-generated podcasts in this scenario?
Well, first on the Luddite thing, I'm glad that you brought that up because I've heard people mention it before in tech circles. I did not know where it originated from. That is fascinating. I've always wondered, because it was like, it's such an interesting term to use for that. So I'm glad that you demystified that. I wonder at what point in history did it like switch over to an insult? But so one thing here I want to mention is what the heck is going on with Wondery? Because, okay, CEO left, but also Wondery just had a lot of kind of mix up in leadership. Yeah. And also, Wondery is the network in which Travis Kelce and his brother's podcast, New Heights, was launched on. So like, there's a lot of really important things happening at the same time here that I think point to some clues of where things are going. I think, yeah, the CEO of Wondery that left for this company, of course, has industry insight. I just don't like the idea of devaluing content and making it seem as cheap as possible, because you and I both know, we've been doing this for years. It takes so much time to create quality content, and trying to put a $1 on it is almost like disgraceful to me, because we've spent so much time creating stuff. And that's not to say that you can create great content with AI, but you have to have a human in the loop. And with this model, it's going to put so much more noise out there and make it harder to hear the signal. And it's already happening with the saturation of podcasters in the market. You and I have both seen it. So it makes it harder to elevate, which is why when I talk to people, I'm like, yeah, my first podcast, I'm doing it for 5 years. It's not like it just popped up yesterday. Like, everyone likes to say, oh, I have a podcast now, which is great. Good for you. Keep going. It's hard. We'll see you on the other side if you make it. But yeah, I think, what is it, 90% of podcasts don't make it past, I think, 100 episodes. I haven't looked at that stat in a while, but what are your thoughts on this one?
It's definitely something where I think there are times where some AI in a podcast would probably be okay. If we had a third co-host who was an AI person, I'm open to that idea. But me personally, unless the podcast quality of that AI is very good and very listenable, I'm not going to choose an AI generated podcast over a human podcast. I would pick the human every time. But I do think there is a difference between a podcast where it's two people sort of speaking off the cuff, going back and forth, hearing ums and ahs, versus hearing people who cut out every cut out every like, every you know. And an AI-generated podcast isn't going to have any of those things. So if you like that clear, crisp audio experience, no stammering, the person just got their idea out clearly every single time, you might prefer an AI podcast. So I could see some scenarios where people might potentially be interested, not me personally necessarily, but I could see that being an attractive way to listen to content.
Totally, totally. And it's interesting because like the tool that we're using, we have the tools to do that, to like remove the ums and ahs and the blank space and all of that. But it's about quality. I think we're just looking at that pinnacle of quality over quantity. Yes. So I encourage everyone to consume responsibly.
Let's go on to our last story. The California State Assembly took a big step toward regulating AI by passing a bill that will regulate AI companion chatbots in order to protect minors and vulnerable users. Good news, this legislation passed with bipartisan support and is now headed to the California State Senate for a final vote. If Governor Gavin Newsom signs this bill into law, It would take effect January 1st, 2026, making California the first state to require AI chatbot operators to implement safety protocols for AI companions and hold companies legally accountable if their chatbots fail to meet those standards. This bill would also require platforms to provide recurring alerts to users and as much as every 3 hours for minors, reminding them they're speaking to an AI chatbot, not a real person, and that they should take a break. That is so important. The last part I want to mention is that this bill would also allow individuals who believe they have been injured by violations from these chatbots to file lawsuits against AI companies seeking injunctive relief and damages up to $1,000 per violation and attorney's fees. And I think that last part is huge because if I feel that something is wrong with a Meta chatbot and I want to sue Meta, they have a million lawyers with way deeper pockets than I ever could. But this would potentially level the playing field for that kind of scenario, even covering attorney's fees in order to make sure that the law is upheld. Ashley, what do you think?
Wow, I'm glad you pulled this. There's so many things. So I'll start with just the last part that you mentioned there about the $1,000 per violation and attorney's fees. This is structured. So there's, I'm going to do devil's advocate here. This is, for me, I feel like this is structured for volume and for access.
Good point.
The average person isn't going to have the capital to pay for attorney's fees. But the $1,000 per violation is surprisingly low. When I think of, for example, the two parents who have lost 14-year-old and a 16-year-old to died by suicide after having, you know, chatbot conversations with character.ai and another one, like, I mean, that's kind of a slap in the face to be like, you're going to give me $1,000 and my son is dead. So I feel like there's something that needs to change here on that front. It needs to be more clear about injuries and violations and defining what that means and defining if death is included. And that needs to be clearly defined. And so that's something that I'm worried about is like, if it keeps it to 1,000, that's good for the tech companies, but good for also people trying to bring things forward because the attorney's fees. What I'm curious about though is the every 3 hour alert for minors. They just need to do that for everyone, adults included.
Yes.
I don't think we're at a place in society yet to fully comprehend and understand and be reminded that AI can make mistakes. Always check for accuracy. Like, I want to put that embroidered on a t-shirt to remind people about it, not just minors. So I think this is a good step in the right direction. Sad that it took this long for it to happen, but another example is that this technology is moving so much faster than policy and legislation does. But this is a good step. Hopefully other states can use portions of this to create a framework that works in their state to protect minors.
I'm glad you brought up about the $1,000 per violation because you're right. That is a plan to increase volume of potential lawsuits, not waiting until something major happens like a death and then try to get a big one, right? It's about a lot of small paper cuts as opposed to one giant. Probably shouldn't use that illustration. That's it for our AI news that you should know about this week. And now a new fun section that we're trying. What's the best thing you used AI for this week? Okay, I'm going to stop it there. If you want to hear the rest of the episode, look for AI news that you should know about wherever you get podcasts. If you listen to it on your smart speaker, you can find it there as well. As always, find links to everything I mentioned and talked about in the show notes. And be sure to come back next time for more social media news, strategy, and other things that you need to know about.
Let me tell you a couple things that you should know about me. A product manager, but do not have a bachelor's degree. But actually, that's factually a fraction of me. Another fraction's posting content, irregular and irrationally. Still probably won't get a job at the gram. They forgot, they don't know, or don't care who I am. Ooh. That's why you never see me at the parties and events. My lack of followers must make me irrelevant. Yeah. Don't have a course, a book to sell to make a bag of grand. Not a social media marketer, don't represent any brands. Plain to see, don't have an agency. But I got a lot of spam, just putting in the work without the glitz and glam. Won't catch me eating fish, unless it's shrimp or clam. No six pack, no risk, that there's a gym card in my hand. Don't have a full-time job, but I got a lot of plans. Stay plotting, dropping knowledge on TikTok and Instagram.